The stereotype snob is an upper-class or upper-middle-class person who, figuratively and sometimes literally, looks down their nose at everyone else. But snobs don't always wear a monocle or a pince-nez. Snobbery can just mean thinking your cultural taste is superior to someone else's. And if you've ever been on the receiving end of snobby, withering or belittling judgment of your work, you'll know how painful it can be. If we're going to be entirely honest with ourselves, we're all capable of snobbery. We like what we like, and we wrinkle our noses at what we don't like. So yes, posh people sneer at so-called lower class people, but it also goes the other way around. And here's where snobbery, inverted or otherwise, blurs with its close cousin, prejudice. Both snobbery and prejudice can be wounding, sensitising and discouraging. But prejudice is, of course, far more dangerous and damaging. I'm Frances Butt, and this is Emotipod Series 2, Creative Blocks. I wanted to ask my friends and family about their experiences of snobbery, and also to check in with our good chum Lisa Jones, the Emotipod resident psychotherapist, and ask her whether it's possible to build resilience against snobbery and prejudice, as well as maybe getting to grips with our own prejudices and the things we tend to get snooty about. And if you've never felt even a little bit snooty about something, you'll be easy to spot by the shining halo over your head. But let's get on with the chats. Most of the examples here are musical because my friends and family are musical and my background was very musical. First, here I am with my guitarist friend Knut Stöver, talking about an artistic sphere that still retains an unfortunate reputation for snobbery, classical music. Because that is a clear prejudice that somebody who hasn't had a formal education or a higher music or been to Berkeley or whatever and can't read notes and can't read dots and know all the clefs is a lesser musician somehow. And but rock musicians are snobby about gentle pop music as well. There's a snobbery everywhere, every which way, in every direction, isn't there? So you just sort of have to grow a thicker skin for that, I guess.
When I went to college to study music, we had a lecturer who was very reactionary in his views, but he was also quite charming, and he was good at teaching his subjects. I mean, basically, his view was that music died with the creative death of Sibelius, and that's it. Nothing good came after.
Oh.
Anyway, and so he was totally against pop music, against jazz, and all of that. But then one thing is that he was on about that you can't argue with what somebody likes. You know, if you like fish and chips better than a kind of well-prepared meal, you can't argue with that. If you like Milton Boone's better than Shakespeare, you can't argue with that. But yeah, you can argue with saying it's better. So there must be something that, like quality. Otherwise, everything would be the same.
Yeah. Of course, it's possible to appreciate good quality in something if you give it due consideration, even if it's not exactly your bag. And that's much more mature than rubbishing it simply because it isn't. Doesn't always stop us. We do seem to love bitching about things we don't like. But it's a good point that Knut's making.
So that I kind of agreed with at the time, definitely. But then who defines that?
Who defines the quality?
And in a way, what's the point? I mean, there's different things. I think it's much better to actually appreciate things for what they are.
Oh, for
sure. Why do you have to kind of
measure
great classical composers against jazz, against
pop music? Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's
interesting. It's a very helpful point, actually, about quality and standards. But you can have quality pop music. You can have quality fish and chips. So, again, it's context and what's the best thing in this moment, which could be the best fish and chips. But also mutual respect or just tolerance. There's this intolerance, I think it comes down to, doesn't it? Where you can't just let other people enjoy their pop music and fish and chips, or their Shakespeare and whatever, because in reverse, in inverted snobbery and Beethoven. Yeah, just accepting that it's all good and it might not be your cup of tea, but that's okay. Yeah.
Well, I saw something on, I'm very interested in Arabic music, which I'm kind of studying, and I saw they found a violinist online who gives very good tutorials on it, and who also has a classical background and who knows Bach and Beethoven and plays all that, but who said that he had an issue with people saying that everybody should know about classical music, even though he appreciates it himself very well. But his view was, as an Arab, that that's ultimately a racist stance, really, because it's holding that above music from other cultures.
Which have been thousands of years in development. Yeah,
yeah. Why should you know about classical music if you have come from another culture and you have a totally different position? I mean, there's a lot to be gained from it,
But it's his narrow point of view as saying Christianity is the standard.
To hold it up to say that that's kind of the pinnacle of everything is was kind of racist at the end of the day.
I agree.
So you can say that snobbery and prejudice come from a limited world view, a simple matter of lack of exposure to other wonderful things, as well as the way opinions are modelled by your parents, teachers and so on. And as my professional cellist sister Tirka points out, growing up in our own large family was very much like this.
Is it snobby if you haven't been introduced to anything else? No, I think we were just ignorant. You know, the family was all encouraged to be academic, but in another sense, we were absolutely ignorant because we had no knowledge of the outside world and how massive it was. It was quite blinkered, wasn't
it? Was
it?
A bubble, yeah.
It really was.
Yeah. Interesting, very interesting. But when you do experience, I mean, you know, some kinds of music. I was listening to music on the radio this morning. Some organ piece came on and it's not my cup of tea.
I don't like the organ.
Now, here we go, right here. Neither Tirka nor I like organ music, by and large, with a couple of exceptions. Are we snobby about it because we don't like it? I'm not sure either way. I confess I struggle even to appreciate the quality of the playing, and I don't think I'm alone.
This one was one of those, God, shut that racket off.
Yes.
And then Petrop Talauni afterwards, he said, I love the things that come in after we played something like that.
Oh,
and one of them was, I would rather have root canal without anaesthetic than listen to that.
I absolutely feel the same about the organ.
Sorry, organist chums. I'm with Tirka and whoever made that root canal quip. But there you go. Even within classical music, we can be rude about what we don't like, whether it's high quality or not. Here's a story from another of my lovely sisters, guitar composer Maria Linnemann.
One guitar quartet, my good students, were playing Telemann concerto for four violins. It was arranged for four guitars. And it was very popular. And they were giving this marvellous performance and people were crowding at the door watching them. And I was standing at the back of this crowd and I heard a little boy saying to his father, Papa, I want to play the guitar. And his father said, no, no, you will play a proper instrument.
Oh. Oh, ow.
Which was a bit depressing.
Another little dude having his dream squashed. I'll say it's depressing. I mean, the guitar quartet was playing Telemann, not Twinkle Twinkle. A comment like that from an elder is bound to make you feel like the thing you want is the wrong thing, not good enough. There's a confidence builder for you. And how about this experience that Maria herself had? She has written many books full of music for people learning classical guitar. Some of them are quite easy pieces, but some of them are pretty difficult.
And when I was playing the first published book that was published in London, at this guitar workshop, this big workshop with Professor Poisian, you know, I had my books behind me in a little pile. And I did think, these people all play Bach, Leopold Weiss, they play the great guitar pieces.
Right.
And here am I with my little pieces. What on earth are they going to do with me? You know, I played through all the pieces in the book. And at the end, I turned around and all the books had gone.
So far, so good.
And then this one chap came up to me and patted me on the head and said, nicht schlecht, die Kleine, huh? Not bad, this little one, is she? And I thought,
oh,
well, I was speechless.
And it was going so well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's snobbery and prejudice and there's unbelievable condescension.
Do you remember when Margaret Thatcher said, it was treachery with a smile on its face? Well, condescension is snobbery with a similarly insincere smile on its face. Imagine being the kind of person who would literally pat someone on the head. Arschloch, pardon my German. If you're a solo performer like Maria, you have to bear everything that comes at you alone. Music producer Amos Childs considers himself lucky in this regard.
When I've been away, I've always been with either one or two of my really close friends. or more. So it's kind of been easier for us to just have a laugh about it and just be like, I've definitely overheard all sorts of shit from very snobby art type people. Because we've played some really arty festivals and I've done them with friends who rap, and maybe me and we, what we do is not as kind of arty, but I think we just always found it kind of funny, and like, who gives a fuck about these people anyway? Like, you know, yeah.
Helps to have a friend with you.
I overheard some people at a breakfast in the hotel one time just being like really snooty about me and my mate, and the fact that there was a rapper at this really pretty like white sort of highbrow type music festival. And I just think like, wow, oh, you're just an asshole. Like, yeah. So it doesn't really bother me too much. I haven't experienced it in a way that has bothered me too much. My reaction to it has always just been like, you're just an asshole, and but I don't care about what you think.
No, that must help.
That's such a healthy attitude, if you can manage to adopt it. And thanks for translating the German for us there too, Amos. Time for our resident psychotherapist, Lisa Jones, now, I think.
Well, this is as the recipient of snobbery and prejudice, we would hope that the listener doesn't practice a lot of snobbery, but actually, we all have prejudice, don't we? We all have prejudice. Yeah. Any clinical deaths on that one?
Wow. Snobbery, very simply, is a behaviour and opinions that are typical of a snob. Snobs, that kind of term is from what used to be, and probably still are, around the, you know, higher upper classes.
Yes.
So, you know, people who very much would look down their nose upon lower classes or people that aren't of the same status, whether that's socially or financially. And so that kind of snobbery comes from people who think basically they are better than everyone else.
Yes, and it can be inverted and go sideways. It can go in any direction. So you can have snobbery about posh people, just as posh people can have snobbery about working class people. It's absolutely, it's multi-directional snobbery, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it's the gift that keeps giving, really, in an awful way.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, because we all have our likes and we all have our dislikes. Mm. And our likes are better than, my likes are better than your likes, obviously. It just stands to reason. It goes like that, doesn't it? What I like is better than what you like. It's very childish, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, this is when it gets tribal, and that can start to become cliquey, and then it can become prejudicial, and that becomes a bit more serious.
Yeah,
so that without even having got to know someone, you make assumptions about them that are negative.
Absolutely, which is exactly what prejudice is, you know, kind of the technical definition, that it's an unfair or unreasonable opinion or feeling, especially when formed without enough knowledge. So exactly what you've just said, you know, seeing somebody and making a huge presumption about them and a judgment about them based on what they're wearing, what they look like, what, you know, what colour they are, how tall they are, where they went to school, you know, all of those things without having any knowledge, anything about that person.
As Lisa has told us in previous episodes, our brains tend to like taking the shortest, easiest route to any decision or conclusion. And life would be very hard if we had to start from scratch every time and disregard all the knowledge we've built up through experience. But that tendency towards shorthand can lead to unfairness if we're not careful. So we see someone, see how they're dressed, see how they speak, and we make snap decisions about who they are, what they're like, and we may be way out.
And you're absolutely right, those prejudices do cause a lot of problems, and it is, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but it is snobbery and prejudice, it's getting a lot better, but it's particularly rife in the performing industries.
Okay. Well, yes, absolutely, and again, in all kinds of directions. How do we handle those kinds of unfair prejudices? Forget it. How do you handle that? Because it's, again, there's nothing you can do if someone's got if someone's going to treat you like that, they don't deserve you to try and win them over, because they really don't. That's the first thing to remember, I guess. But but how do you handle your little heart?
Oh, such a good question. And it's a really difficult one to answer. And that comes back to, and again, unfortunately, this doesn't happen overnight. This requires quite a lot of work, but that self-acceptance, the self-compassion, the self-love, the self-worth, the self-esteem, all of those things, you know, we have to be in a position as individuals where we actually value ourselves and know our worth and know that therefore somebody else's opinion of us based on a certain thing, again, isn't about us as a whole person.
And we've been here before too, but it can never be overstated. Acceptance, and yes, even some approval of yourself as you are, is fundamental to resilience against snobbery, and certainly for staying strong in the face of prejudice. Snobbery, classism, racism, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia, chip away at self-worth.
And it's really difficult because, you know, there will be some circumstances where actually it does need to be called out and it needs to be addressed and it needs to be dealt with.
Yeah.
There are other circumstances where it might be appropriate to kind of just go, okay, walk away, you know, shrug it off. That's such a difficult one because I think the reason it's so difficult to answer is because normally when this happens, it catches us off guard because we don't expect people to be. And I don't know why we don't expect it. We live in a very prejudiced world, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but in today's world, we don't expect it.
Yeah.
So, I think it catches people off guard. Therefore, it's like,
oof. It does. It unbalances you.
And that's a gut punch, you know? And
yes,
it's like,
it is.
Okay. So, in the moment, and again, it takes practice, but as much as people can, it's that being able to almost even internally just say, stop, breathe, and give yourself a moment to literally just take a breath. Just, you know, even if it's a, you know, we're like, oh, even if it's that, just, okay, take a moment, take a breath, let me gather myself, feel your feet. Let me feel my feet on the floor. Let me be grounded. So it's that whole think before you speak type of thing. Because it might be you want to react. Oh, sorry, respond, not react. That's never really a good idea. respond. It might be that the response is to walk away. But either way, the person who has experienced a prejudice wants to maintain, where possible, the element of calm. And I'm going to use the word superiority. And I don't mean in terms of as a person, but in terms of that power play of actually, I'm not going to rise.
Yeah.
To the other person's prejudice.
Yeah, this is when they go low, we go high.
Yeah,
kind of vibe,
absolutely.
It feeds into bullying, doesn't it? Which in school is sadly rife and has never gone away and probably never will go away. But yes, that having a moment or being strong enough to withstand that at any age, actually being bullied or being picked on or being picked out as wrong for unfair reasons. Again, practicing resilience for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And remembering, and it's so important. And again, easier said than done. And it's in the moment, most of this stuff kind of goes out the window because our emotion takes over.
Absolutely. You know?
But remembering that if somebody is behaving in that way, then being prejudiced, for example, or being a snob or whatever, that says so much about that person.
Yes.
You know, and it's remembering that. And it's almost, I kind of always remember my mum being in a situation, and I won't go into the whole details, and my mum kind of saying to me, she's like, treat the situation with the contempt it deserves.
Yeah.
Like don't rise to it. That's about that person.
Yeah.
It's clearly not happy. They're clearly not, they don't like themselves very much, all of these things. And it's like, and that's an absolute projection. You know, remember her saying, if you can look in the mirror, and you're okay with yourself and you love and respect and value yourself, that's what matters. That other person's opinion is one other person's opinion. And that doesn't, you know, I don't have to give that person the power and the control to then take away my worth, you know. And they're really difficult things.
But we're talking about boundaries here, though, aren't we? And these are invisible but brilliant concepts, the concept of boundaries. And if you're very nice and you've been taught to be nice, nice little girl who doesn't say nasty things or do nasty things, you might be vulnerable to an unhappy person coming at you and you won't have formed those boundaries. So the whole concept of boundaries is something I'd like to talk about at some point a bit more, because yeah, is so important, because yeah, people absolutely. Haven't even some people haven't even learned about
no.
how to define them, what they mean, what they are. Yeah. So
you can hear more about developing the concept and your use of your own boundaries if you go to francisbutt.com/toolbox and check out boundaries in both the ideas box and the practices box. We could talk about that. But have you ever had clients who have been dealing with bullying and been trying to get past their experiences of bullying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I guess is kind of a practiced or meted out prejudice in a way, isn't it? Because it's just being picked on randomly.
Yeah, probably. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the advantage of working kind of with clients is that we can do all this work over a period of time, you know, and learn and develop these skills and all of those things. But, you know, absolutely, if somebody, you know, if somebody's behavior is unacceptable, it does need to be addressed. It does need to be called out. You know, it's, I'm a big advocate for not putting up with.
Oh, yeah.
And it is okay to say something. And of course, depending on the context and the circumstance, there will be a way to do that. Mm. You know, I'm not saying that somebody just goes in guns blazing and trying to win the fight, because that might not be the best course of action. But, you know, there are options. Yeah, and I think it's really important that, you know, to say that people, I truthfully do believe that every single one of us in some form has experienced some sort of bullying or prejudice or, you know, towards us. And it's really sad that that's such a commonly shared experience.
But we talk about that. We talk about the being bullied, but we don't talk about the bullying. But we don't talk about the bully and how to help the bully not bully anymore. And that's a big gap, I think, in. Because it's taboo, and the stigma of having done that is so immense, isn't it? To have been rotten to somebody else, is the stigma is very painful. So, you know, the guilt, the shame is so awful.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I mean, unfortunately, it's very difficult to get those people generally into therapy or what have you.
Yeah.
Because none of us like having the mirror held up to us. Crikey, you know, I do it to clients all the time. I loathe having it done to me. In fact, it happened to my business partner, did it to me yesterday, and I was like, oh my god, this is so hard, but you're so right, and I don't want to have this conversation, you know. It never gets any easier. To kind of when somebody calls you out on your bad behavior or unacceptable behavior, but if we don't call it out, we don't learn how we can't change. And you're absolutely right, and there does need to be more support, because there's a reason that people bully. Hurt people yes. very simply.
Yes.
And actually, all of it comes from some sort of pain, whatever pain that is, in whatever context that is. That's ultimately where it comes from, you know. And the more we can try and support people and help them understand the reasons behind their behaviours, because if we remember, a behaviour is always a response of an emotion, you know, and trying to help people figure that stuff out, people can change hugely. But again, it's not something that just happens overnight, and it's not something that we just go, oh, that's it, that's exactly why I've done
where's
this
the and, button
yeah you know.
But there's hope, is what we want to be saying here. There is hope to change, because somebody once said to me, people don't change, and I think that's not true.
I agree with you.
People can absolutely change.
Absolutely, yeah.
Whether it's true or not, I bloody well believe it. No, I do believe it. I need to believe that. Otherwise,
honestly, and I wouldn't do my job. I would not be a therapist if I didn't believe people could change. You know, and again, this is not for now, but have worked with people who have experienced and done awful things.
Yeah.
And have come through the other side. And we've gone on that very long, painful journey. And, you know, and there is always hope, and people absolutely can change if they want to. And sometimes that might take people quite a while to get to that stage where they kind of go, actually, no, I do want to do this. Yeah. Some people, unfortunately, don't ever want to change, but those people are actually few and far between.
Yeah, we all want to be better. We all want to feel better, be better. We do. We want to feel better, and that involves being better. Yeah.
Yeah. So there is hope. There is absolutely hope out there.
Well, we got a bit deep there, didn't we? But to return to snobbery in the context of the arts, maybe the best thing to do is just to seek out and work somewhere that fits you the best, wherever that may be. There's often an element of lottery about aiming for this, trying this or that thing, applying for jobs or courses. Sometimes it's worth fighting for a place, and sometimes it ain't. Either way, we've established yet again that before anything else, we need some solid self-acceptance, because we can't guarantee it from anyone else, other than our trusted loved ones, I would hope. And as regards prejudice, when should you not respond to something, and when should you call it out? That's a huge topic. Ignoring it can make things worse as well as better. And calling it out can be risky too, because confrontation always carries risk. It's a moment to trust your gut and listen to it, I guess. When Michelle Obama used that phrase I mentioned earlier, when they go low, we go high, she went on to say, going low is easy, which is why people go to it. It's easy to lead by fear. It's easy to be divisive. It's easy to make people feel afraid. I would add that it's all too easy to make people feel less than and not good enough. But back to Mrs. Obama's words, that's the easy thing, and it's also the short-term thing. And going high doesn't mean you won't feel the hurt or have emotions when faced with a challenge. It means that your response has to reflect the solution. It shouldn't come from a place of anger or vengefulness. Anger may feel good in the moment, but it's not going to move the ball forward. Unquote. And she also said that if her words are not fixing a problem, she's not going high enough. What a woman. I love the way Lisa described stopping, taking a breath, feeling your feet on the floor. Sounds like fighting talk, getting yourself into a state where you may have to do battle, or at least be ready to defend yourself, because that's exactly what facing snobbery or prejudice calls for. Finally, to return to the issue of taste in the arts that we set out with, what about the I could have done that phenomenon? Could you? A good arty friend of mine once said, I'm only ever disappointed in an art gallery if I come away thinking I could have done that myself. But I've never heard her say that about Picasso's simple line drawings. So once again, art is subjective, but there's no arguing really with true quality. When it comes to my own snobbery, I promise to try and be kind about other people's work. But I'm not sure I can promise that I'll always succeed. Shall we finish with a quote or two as usual? Here's journalist and news anchor Dan Rather. An intellectual snob is someone who can listen to the William Tell Overture and not think of the Lone Ranger. And from Salvador Dali, in order to acquire a growing and lasting respect in society, it is a good thing, if you possess great talent, to give, early in your youth, a very hard kick to the right shin of the society that you love. After that, be a snob. Next time in Emotipod 2 Creative Blocks, we'll be looking at our attention span in the age of TikTok and Twitter. Has it become a critical problem these days? But until then, keep on creating what you love creating because you love it. You need no other reason.